We're here on Daf Kuf Amud Aleph, and we're mamish at the end of the Amud, the last two lines. And just to refresh our memories, we're talking about a statement in a Braisa that indicates that if a person hires a skilled worker and that person messes up and he's mekalkel, then he has to pay damages if he's a hejot, but not if he's an uman. And again, just to summarize what we've been saying, is that in the case of an uman, we assume that he did whatever he had to do, and there were circumstances beyond his control, he's anus. But in the case of the hejot, who invited him? Why did he take it upon himself, such an awesome responsibility, when he still needs expertise? You know, he still has to be an apprentice and learn the ropes. And the Gemara says that the chiyuv on the part of the hejot in this case to pay damages is based on the shita of Rabbi Meir. And the shita of Rabbi Meir is that doin dina de garmi. And we had a long discussion last week, if you recall, exactly what garmi is. We'll just repeat the shita of the Ramban, is that garmi is considered close enough. It's bari azeka, and there's a maisa in which the mazik actually comes in contact with the object that he destroys, and therefore he's chayav according to the din d'oraisa. That's the shita of Rabbi Meir. Then we embarked upon an endeavor to try to discover and isolate which Rabbi Meir this is. Where did Rabbi Meir commit himself to this position? And with two occasions, two attempts were unsuccessful. One was the Mishnah in Bechoros about the judge, and we said there in that case the judge gave down the wrong ruling, but he went a step further and he actually acted out his ruling. You know, he took the money from the Toveah, and he gave it from the Nitpa, he gave it over to the Toveah. He took the Mashkon from the Toveah, gave it over to the Nitpa, and so forth and so on. And there, he's Chayav Bidine Adam, even if you hold that Grava Ben Ezekin Potter and Garmias Potter, because there he did a Maisa B'Yadayim. The second attempt was the mission that we're going to have very soon about the Tzaba, you know, the dyer. And in this case, the Gemara thinks that by soaking the wool in the wrong colored dye, and eventually that wool absorbs the color of that dye, it's going to become, down the line, a hezek for the person who wanted red and he got black, or vice versa. And that too is doin dina de garmi. Rabbi Meir holds that the tzaba has to pay damages. He's liable because of the law of garmi. And the Gemara rejects that attempt as well, because there too, there's a maisa b'yadayim. There too, he actively, this tzaba, this dyer, took the wool of his friend and soaked it in the wrong dye, the wrong color. Ella ha Rabbi Meir. Now we're up to the third attempt. And this is to some extent based on a sugya at the beginning of Masechet Bava Basra called Mechitzas HaKerem. And what is Mechitzas HaKerem? You know that there's an Iser Kelayim when there's a mixture of grapes, of vine, with tvua, with produce, with grains. And if there are two neighbors and they're situated contiguous one to the other, one is growing grapes, he has a vineyard, the other on his side, in his territory, is growing crops, he's growing grains. So what we set up between these two fields is a machitza, a partition. And the Mishnah says in Bava Basra, Daf Chavav Amud Aleph, that even though a person should not be planting his grapes right near the field of his friend, but if he's marchik dalad amos, if he separates himself from his friend by a breadth of 4 amos, then it's mutter. And I'll read to you the language. He says, "Lo yita adam ilan samach l'stei chaveru." A person should not be planting right on the borderline, smack up against the borderline of his friend's field, elim kein hirchik mimenu arba amos, unless he separates himself and distances himself by 4 amos. However, the Mishnah continues and says, "Haya gader beintayim." If they set up a partition between them, is zeh somech legader mikan, v'zeh somech legader mikan. Then they're both allowed to. This one has his produce here, right up against the borderline of his friend's field, which is a vineyard, and there's no problem because that's considered a gader, a machitza that separates between the two. And it seems that this machitza works in a halachic way, meaning the Gemara is not willing to guarantee, again, that's the sugya of Basra, that there won't be any admixture here underneath the ground. Maybe some of the roots of the vines, you know, could get intertwined with some of the roots of the barley or the grains that are growing. But nevertheless, there's a halachic concept of separation, and that separation is an intellectual decision on the part of the two owners to separate their, you know, this one's kerem from this one's tvua or ilan. And that intellectual decision is itself enough to be mafkia, to completely remove the iser kelayim. In other words, what I'm trying to submit to you, Rabosai, is, and this was a chiddush for me, that kelayim is not what you call a metzius. It's not just a physical, biological reality. It is a halachic concept. When the Torah prohibits kelayim, it does so when certain legal conditions are met. And if those conditions are not met, then the physicality of it is irrelevant. It's the halacha that determines the law. And a perfect example is the gader, is this machitza that was set up between the kerem and the tvua. Unfortunately, what happened is, and that's going to be the brisa that we're studying here, the brisa of Rabbi Meir, the machitza fell apart. And then the issue is going to be, well, who's responsible to replace or restructure that machitza? And for some odd reason, I don't know why yet, I mean, maybe I do know, but I'm making believe I don't know. Okay. For some reason, it is the Bala Kerem, the owner of the vineyard, who is personally responsible to re-erect, you know, restructure this machitza. And in order to do so, he is given a few warnings. We have to figure out why and exactly how many warnings he's given, whether it's 1, 2, 3 different warnings, I don't know. And if he finally fails, you know, he defaults. I mean, again, for lack of a better word, if he defaults on replacing this partition, then what happens is that at some point, his kerem is considered the mazik, you know, it's the active element here. Again, we have to know why. And the kerem actively goes out and creates kelayim on the tvua of his friend. Again, all these concepts have to be ironed out, but just to give you a general feeling of the physics of it. The physics of it is that, number one, the Bala Kerem is planting his vineyard all the way up to the boundary of the Bala Tvua, and that's okay because they have a mechitza in between them. The physics of it is that this mechitza fell down. The person amongst these two neighbors who's personally responsible for replacing this machitza is the Baal HaKerem. And the physics of it is because the Kerem is considered the active agent that is infecting, so to speak, infecting the Tvua and making the Tvua into Kalayim.
Are we doing the third case, by the way?
This should be the third case. Oh, it's the fourth? I'm sorry, I made a mistake in the counting. The first was the Dayan, the second one was the Tzoveya. What was the third?
Masachich.
Oh, yeah, the Masachich. Okay. Yeah, you're right. I skipped the third. Thank you, Mitch, for pointing that out to me. So let me, once I'm already on this line, let me go back to this fourth case, and then we'll we'll turn the clock back to the third case. The third case is very similar to the fourth case. Now, there's another point that I want to make over here. What is the ratio between that part of the Geffen of the vineyard and the Tvua, such that there's no bittel? What I mean is the following. Normally, when there's a mixture of Iser and Heter, we have a concept called Yavesh B'Yavesh. If two things are dry, then there's bittel Barov. And here too, if the amount of impact of the Kerem on the Tvua is minimal, such that it's less than 50%, then on a Doraisa level we apply the principle of Rov. And therefore the Kerem is Batel Barov. The Rabbanon, however, instituted a new shear of Bittel. And that shear is called Echad B'Masayin. In the case of Klaya Kerem, that means as soon as the Kerem has produced a ratio of, let's say, 1 to 199 in the Tvua, in relation to the Tvua, that itself is Kelayim, according to the rabbinic requirement of Bittel. However, if the amount of impact of the Kerem, again, I don't know how you measure this, but that's a different issue, is 1 to 200, meaning the ratio between the Tvua, if the Tvua is number 1 and the Kerem is 200, that ratio of 200 to 1 is enough for Bittel, even on a Drabbanon level. And that's why he says over here that Nifritza, im Yosifu Azroim Echad Mimasayim, as soon as the growth that is attributed to the Geffen is 1 to 200, Ye Asru, then all the Tvua becomes Asr. Why? Because if the Tvua increases by a ratio of 1 to 200, it means that 199 of that 200 is due to the Klaya Kerem, and therefore there is no Bittel. If the, on the other hand, the ratio would be 1 to 200, Echad B'Masayim, then there's Halacha of Bittel. And the one who points this out is Rashi, but the only thing is, Rashi is on the other side of the page here, on Daf Kuf Amid Beis. Rashi says, Shalom Yosef, why does the Baal HaTfuah insist that the Baal HaKerem has to replace the Gader? Because Shalom Yosef, he's afraid that the Tvua will grow by Echad Mimasayim, meaning 1 to 200, which means 1 to 199, and that's going to create an Easter Kelayim. Okay, now what did I skip? Just 1 minute, I skipped something, so Mitch is right. Elohad Rabbi Meir, Disnan, this is a Mishnah Kelayim, Hamesachech, Es gifano al gabi tvu osel shel chavero hareze kidesh. In this case, as opposed to the case that we discussed until now, where the partition fell and the owner of the vineyard was guilty in the fact that he didn't replace and restructure the mechitza, here the Baal HaKerem actually actively pours over, he points his vineyard in the direction of the Tvua of his friend, V'chayev. And the Mesachech is going to pay the Baal HaTvuah because everything became Asur Behana. And the question I want to ask you is, why does the Gemara think that that's totally in Garmi? L'chora here, there's a Maisa B'Yadayim. Right? He actively did so. And the Gemara answers, which is exactly what we anticipated, Hasam Nami Ka'avid B'Yadayim. He did it actively, and therefore he's a Mazik Mamish, Mazik B'Yadayim Mamish. He's not a Gorem. He's not a Garmi situation. So what was Gemara thinking in the Hav Amina? So the answer, I believe, is that, remember we said that the Tvua, in order to become Asur B'Toras Kalayim, which is called Kidesh, That's a very interesting halacha. Kiddush, the word kiddush means asur, actually. Not, we translate it as sanctified, but here it means asur. Is the only time it becomes kiddush is when there's a tosefes in the growth of the tvua beyond the masayim of bittul. And since that is a process that takes a certain amount of time, it's not immediate. The Gemara thinks at this point that in order to be mechayev someone for a nezik that's going to take place down the line, but not immediately, that's called garmi, and only Rav Meir would maintain that. And the Gemara seems to drop that and says the following, that since, if you pardon the pun here, he sows the seeds, you know, he's already putting into motion this process, which will reach fruition a little bit down the line, that itself, if he does it actively, but b'maisi b'yadayim, is enough to be mechayev him, even if I reject Rabbi Meir's garmi. In the case of Mechitzas HaKerem, there, he didn't do this act of mesachech. He did not point the... How does he translate the word mesachech? I mean, it's loshen to create an over...
Like a roof.
A roof, yeah.
I mean, was there a fence between them? What's going on here? Is there a before he was mesachech, were the two things next to
him? I don't know. Does Rashi say anything about that?
Let's just see. I just can't figure out what's going on.
Yeah, here. Rashi doesn't say that he had a machitza here. In other words, in this case, he was marchik, right? Remember, keep in mind the machitza is only necessary when he plants his vineyard right up against the boundary.
So you're four amos away.
Way.
And then you...
Yeah, I don't know what the word mesachek in English. David, can you help me out over here?
You train it together?
Yeah, it says...
It's like a...
Just, I need an English word here for mesachek.
Oh, like he spreads it over.
Spreads, okay, spreads. I would have said bends, maybe.
Yeah, like
you know,
over.
He bends it over. So he's got a vine that's four amos long, and he spreads it on top of the tvua of his chaver, and the Gemara vacillates as to whether or not that's called Maisa B'Yadayim or Garmi. In our case, just getting back to our case, and here we're going to turn to Daf Kuf Amid Beis, the Mechitza fell down, Omer Lo Gidar. That's very important to know who's talking to who. And the Bala Tvua is talking to the Bala Kerem, and he's saying, replace this partition in order to avoid any admixture in which my tvua will add masayim, and therefore the relationship between the gefen and the tvua will be 1 to 200, which is really 1 to 199, as we said before, and therefore everything's going to become awesome. And now we have to come to grips with the following question: why is it that the Baal HaGefen, I'm sorry, the Baal HaKerem, or the Baal HaGefen, if you will, is the one who's responsible for putting up this partition? Why not turn back to the Baal HaTvua and say to him, well, why are you sitting pretty on the sidelines? Why don't you get up and build this partition?
Because it's the vine that is going to actively grow. If that, without that fence, that vine is going to spread over to the cornfield. The cornfield's not going to spread.
By itself, no, but we're talking about the grain growing.
If you see a vine growing, you have to put a frame up. And the whole vines are built on frame.
So let me read to you, if you don't mind. Again, the photocop machine is not working here, but it's not that long. He says, Madu al Bala Kerem Mutar Mutal, why is his responsibility with Salek Ha Isur Mibal Atvua and Lahamid Es Hamachitza? So he quotes number one, the Tosus Rid. And soon we'll come to Tosis Divim Askel Omer, that's the top Tosis here on Kuf Amid Beis. But the Tosis Rid says the following: Ha'isur, maybe this is what Michael you were saying, Ha'isur ba machmas ha'gefanim velo machmas ha'zroim. How does he know this? Shagefanim yonkim lemerchak. The gefen has the capacity of nurturing itself for a distance. Yosem and Azroim. Azroim are pretty much locally bound. He says, and even if you'll tell me that, this is you really have to know the first parak of Bava Basra inside out, or actually the second parak of Bava Basra, I would say, is who has to be marked from whom? Does the mazik have to be makik from the nizak? That's what we've been assuming. Or the opposite is true. The nizak himself has to be makik himself. He has to protect himself, which is actually one of the shita, one of the shitas of the Tanoim. He says, "Afil lefi shita zu shal anizak lahachik es atzmo me'amazik yode bekach." He would admit in this case, shal amazik lahachik es anezek mishum shagefen mispashet letoch sode shal tvua shal chavero v'nechshav girei didei. So again, if you ever learn the second parak of Baba Basra, the most important concept in that parak, which is on Chof Hei, and that's the central concept of Shechemim, of Nizkei Shechemim, is called Girei Dilei. Meaning that normally when you have two neighbors that border on each other, each one is sort of being mazik the other one. There's no Girei Dilei. No one is actually sending out arrows from his area, from his territory into his friend's field. However, the Gemara says that in a case of Girei Dilei, like for example, the Gemara has a case, if I remember correctly, where someone takes a shovel and he bangs on the ground contiguous to his friend's field without being marchik, the Dalet Amos that he was required to do, and as a result, the reverberations, is there such a word in English, of the banging, of the impact of the shovel on the ground destroys the roots of the balatfua who are next door. The Gemara says that in that case everybody agrees, even those who hold ala nizak lahachik is atzmo, that here the mazik is chayv because of girei delay, which literally means those are his arrows that he shoots out. And here too, according to Tosis Rid, since the gefen, it's the vine that spreads itself, that's called girei delay, and therefore he, the bala gefen, is required to be marchik.
He says, we're not talking about the roots, because if the mechitza were there, the roots are still growing. So what's growing? The branches?
Yes, the branches, yeah, you have to know.
And so if it's the branches, what are we talking about? Yunika. I mean, I don't understand. If Yunika is roots, then the fence makes no difference. And if the Yunika is not roots, then...
Again, the fence is not a physical, biological entity. The fence is a halachic entity.
Right,
you know, it's a separation.
If we're talking about, gathering Yanika from underneath the ground, what difference does the fence make? And if we're not talking about that, then what are we talking about?
I'm not sure I understand your question, Mitch, but let me again just, I can just share with you what I understand. He's saying like this. Stop me when the problem arises. He's saying like this. Afilu l'shita soveret shal anizak l'harchik atzmo yode bekaze ofen kevon de hagefen yode, I'm sorry, shahamazik chayav l'harchik atzmo min anezek. Why? Mishum shagefen mispashet v'nechshav kmo girei didei.
That sounds like it's the top of the Geffen.
Yes. Again, I don't know if it's the top or the bottom, but he's saying that at the very moment that this partition falls down, what happens is the Hezek begins because the Geffen is mispashet.
Right.
And then he, just give me one more minute, because again, I'm just trying to get my feet established here. He says, Ke'ein zeh, kosav haramban, Sha'af al gav de la halacha kaimel on kirab yosi, de ala nizak laharchik is atzmo, aval kan cave on the havi giri delay, uba bala gefen litchumo shall chaver balatvua, the ain chaver balatvua nichnas litchumo shall a gefen, lachain chayav hamazik laharchis is atzmo, and he writes that if he's not mazik himself, then yesh baze isur machmas kilayim she mechayev oso ligdar. And now again, this is way beyond my purview, this is already laws in kilayim. There's something called mechayim kilayim Klai Akerem. There's the two Isurim in Klai. One is to plant them together, and the other is to allow them...
Maintain them.
To allow them to be maintained. Okay, fine. Aval Tosfos. Now we're up to Tosfos. Shita Amar Lo Gedor. He writes, Shemasha Masrim Es Bal Akerem... Mishum shu mazik mipnei shedalid avos sheomru laharchik hu b'shvil avodas hakerem. Tosa says the following, that again the partition is a substitute for what's called harchaka. The fundamental din is that you have to be marchik, and the question is who has to be marchik and why. So he says that the Mishnah establishes in Baba Basra Yichof Vav that a person who is planting a vineyard has to be marchik dalet amos, and the reason for that is because of what's called avodas hakerem. In other words, when a person works his kerem, he's got to use a plow, and that plow takes up a space of dalet amos, and we have to give him a harchok of dalet amos so that he can put his plow on the very up until, but not beyond the boundary of his own field. So that in order that he shouldn't take the plow and enter into the field of his friend, he, the Bala Kerem, has to be marchik himself 4 amos from the boundary, which means the following, that the Bala Tvua can plant his Tvua up until the boundary line, whereas the Bala Kerem has to give himself a distance of 4 amos of harchoka, in which his kerem will come only up to, but not beyond, the 4 amah distance.
So he can't grow it up to the fence.
He can't grow it up to the fence. Well, it depends. If instead of a fence, you're right, he has to be marchik himself dalet amos. The halacha gives him another option. Instead of being marchik himself dalet amos, he can put up a mechitza. So who's responsible for that?
How does he work if he needs four amos around, which are
not consistent. Either you say it's only because I might be mazik my neighbor by bringing my plow in, right. So plow on the other side of the vineyard. Put the vineyard against the border and take 4 amos on the other side, which is my property, and on the other side of me, and then right next to me.
But again, if I understand Tosfos correctly, again, you have to know Kalayim for this. Kalayim is very complicated. But what Tosfos is saying is that the option of putting up a mechitza is an option that's being given, it's being granted for the benefit of the Bala Kerem. In other words, the Bala Kerem has a right to avail himself of this opportunity of a mechitza in order to avoid the Iser Kalayim that he would be violating. So the whole takana was made to be marchik the gefen from the borderline. That takana was a requirement on the shoulders of whom? The Bala Kerem, right? And therefore, says Tosfos, if he's not being marchik himself, instead he's availing himself of the option of what? Of this mechitza, then if the mechitza goes down, that's his responsibility to replace the mechitza.
Right. My only question is, if he needs 4 amos in order to work the kerem, and he puts the thing right up against the fence, then he doesn't have 4 amos
right
on the other side.
Right, he's going to have to give up on those dalet amos. In other words, what he's going to do is he's going to use the harisha to plow and plant, and then if he wants to, he can now plant all the way up to the boundary. Once he's done the harisha. But he's going to have to guarantee that there will be a partition as a replacement for this harkon.
So he doesn't need a fence. So he could just have 4 amos without a fence.
Correct. Or another alternative is he could have the fence. And then Afkamina is going to be that since the advantage of the fence is his, and the takono, if I understand correctly, was made on his behalf, he's got to guarantee that there's a fence there.
According to Tosfos, the fence really doesn't just serve as keeping the two separated. It just as
again, it's a halachic partition.
Yeah,
it has to do with dini mechitzas and all the halachas and mechitzas, that we derive in Shabbos and Erevin and Sukkah. They're all derived from Klai Akerem.
But the 4 amos of halachic
too. Yechiel, that's the best I can do.
No, I'm saying the 4 amos of halachic too, because if you say that the characteristic of gefen is that they grow.
Yeah.
So it'll take a little bit longer, but it'll grow the 4 amos into the tool as well.
Whatever it is. Okay. Now I asked you, what happens when the mechitza goes down? Correct? So I pointed out to you that the Bala Tfuah has to warn the Bala Geffen. Okay? And why is that so? If you take a look, the Braisi on the top of the Kuf Amid Beis says, Nifritza, right? Omer Lo Gidar, the Bala Tfuah has to warn the Bala Kerem to place, or replace this fence. And why is that so? Nifritza, again, he, Omer Lo Gidar, now this is a second time, right? And the question is why. So he says here, in the name of the Ramban, that in Lo Hisrubo, if they didn't warn him, Shema Shogeghu Upotur. And this is going to create a whole discussion here as to whether or not Shogeg applies. It's Richu Lomar, again, according to this Shita of the Ramban. The Ramban is actually quoting the Shita. We'll soon see the Ramban disagrees with this Shita. But Hitzrichu Lomar Lo Gidar, Velokak Bepam Rishon El Gam Bepam Ashnia, She'eno Sovur Lios Chayav Ligdar Kol Shoa. In other words, although the Baal HaKerem replaced the partition, now it fell a second time. And the reason why he's got to be notified a second time, I mean, after all, doesn't he realize that, you know, this partition is not standing well? And the answer is no. He doesn't think that the responsibility goes as far as to Kol Shah, that on every moment he's got to stand over the fence to make sure that it doesn't fall again. But the Nifritz of Pam Shlishis, if again it happens a third time, then, although the Ramban is not sure about it, he says, Yesh Lomar, the Eino Tzarech Lahasros Bo Pam Shlishis, Maspik Pamayim, that two warnings might be sufficient for him to realize that at this point his obligation vis-a-vis this partition changes from just simply setting it up to watching it and supervising it. Aval Ramban Cholek, the Ramban disagrees. And he says that Garmi, according to Rabbi Meir, has the same status as Maisa Hezek. The Chiddush of Rabbi Meir is that we upgrade Garmi to the status of a Hezek. Ube Maisa Hezek, Leka Ptur Shogeg. He says when it comes to Adam HaMazik, there is no, again, we're considering him an Adam HaMazik because, as we said before, his Geffen is, so to speak, attacking the Tfuah of his neighbor. And if that be the case, then there's no p'tur of shogeg. Uladas Rabbi Meir chiyuv garmi humi ikar adin velo mishum knas. And therefore, says the Ramban, I disagree with that first shita that I mentioned, that the whole purpose of this hasra is to make sure and guarantee that he's not a shogeg. Who cares whether he's a shogeg or not? If Rabbi Meir equates garmi with an adam amazik, then he's chayav even shogeg. Then the Ramban says, "The osa sha'amru nifritza omer lo gdar." So why then does the Bryce insist that we have to notify him and warn him to set it up? After all, even without asroi, he should be chayev because of the din of garmi. He says, "She'ein asroim nesarim elin kein hisrubo." The din of asroi has nothing to do with the chiyuv and the liability of the Bala Kerem to pay damages. It's Allah and Hilchis Kelayim, that there's a condition in Kelayim that Kelayim depends upon the awareness of a person that he has to put up a fence and the decision that he made intellectually that he's not going to put up the fence. Lo mishum shim lo hisru bo lo yischayev. He's going to be chayev even without asra. El she'ein hazroim nesorim ela imkein hisru bo. Why? Shemin astam, without asra, the premise of the halacha is delo nichale. He's not interested. She's arev karmo b'tvuas chavero. his intention would be to set up this partition, which he did on the first round, and he never indicated any violation of that will. He maintains his original will. He's not interested in a taroves, in a mixture between his vines and the tvua of his friend, and therefore he says there's no issur kelayim. And Rabosai, again, I'm not learning Kelayim now, but I can tell you again that the laws of Kelayim are not biological, and obviously his intention to put up the fence has no impact whatsoever, Bashetat, you know, in the reality of things, but nevertheless, it's not Osu Mishum Kelayim. So again, Rabosai, just to summarize, there are two fundamentally different ways of understanding and classifying this need for a hasra omer lo gdar. Either it's a precondition in setting up a chiyuv on the part of the bala kerem to pay damages, because otherwise we assume he's a shogeg, or alternatively, it has nothing to do with damage laws, it has to do with the laws of kelayim, that unless there was a decision on his part that he's not going to put up the fence, then we assume he has no interest in the mixture between his kerem and his friend's tvua, and that's not asur bidin kelayim. What happens after the second warning? I'm trying not to answer questions, Mitch, because I do want to get to the next Mishnah today. And the Braisa continues and says, if after two warnings, nisyayish mimena v'lo gedara, at this point, the owner of the Geffen has indicated that he's not going to put the effort, he's not going to make the effort into restructuring this fence, Harezek Kidesh, which sounds like the Ramban, at this point, once is Yeush, then there's an Iser Kelayim in the Tvua. And why is that? Because now at this point, he doesn't care one way or the other whether or not there's going to be an mixture of Geffen together with the Tvua. And that's called what? That's called Kelayim. Once there's Yeush, and the apparent Gili Milsi, the Umdara, is that he, the owner of the Geffen, is not at all intending to replace the Goder, at that point we say that he has an interest, so to speak. Again, don't ask me why he has such an interest, but he couldn't care less if the Kelayim is going to be created as a reality. That's as far as Kiddush is concerned. Our punchline is the next two words, and that is V'chayev Bachar Yuso. Right now we're getting into Dini Mamonos. Now that the Iser Kelayim has been set, again, assuming there's no Bittul, then at this point the Brisa establishes that the Baal HaKerem is going to have to pay damages to the Baal Tvua, even though this Iser Hanov Kelayim was a result of non-action. In other words, what did the Baal HaKerem actually do actively? But the answer is, as soon as he made this decision that he's not going to replace the Goder, that's called what? Garmi. That's called Garmi. And in the footnote he points out here, why is this called Garmi? Why isn't this Grubba bin Ezekin? And he says the answer is Shadovar Nechshav Libari Azeka, right? But Hayeush, who's Zeshigori Mesanezek? Fascinating. He's saying like the following, that Garmi is midway between two polar extremes. It's not called Mazik, it's called Groma, but it's not called Groma, it's called Garmi. How do you engender that middle compromise, middle of the road shita? He says the following. On the one hand, it's Bari Azeka. In other words, once the decision is made of what we call Yeush, that he's not going to replace the fence, what can I absolutely predict at this point? It's a matter of time, but it's going to happen. There's going to be an Issur Kelayim on the Tvu of Chavera. That Bari Azeka tells me that we're not in the level of Grumma. Grumma always involves, as we discussed last week, an element of uncertainty. Maybe the Hezek will occur, maybe somebody will prevent the Hezek from occurring. But here it's definite. However, ask yourself now that it's Bari Hezek, maybe it should be Maisa Hezek Mamish. The answer is, what creates the Hezek? It's Yeush. Yeush means the fact that this Baal HaKerem decided in his mind that he's not going to replace the Goder. that is not an active hezek that would constitute maisa hezek, but rather it is an inactive hezek, which would make it into grama. But it's not grama either, because it's bari hezek. And then he offers another possibility. He says, "Af hagfanim shelo eino mazikim esatvua el garmim leiser kelaim sheyofo." Forget about the fact that he decided through his yeirus that he's not going to replace the fence. There's another reason why this is not called mazik biyadayim. And that's because it's his gefen that's going to create this iser. He never actively took the gefen, as he did in the previous case of Masachseich, and placed it into the field of his friend, of his Baal Tvua. What he does is he allows the kerem, the gefanim, to grow and be mazik the Tvua of Chavero, and therefore that's only grama, and that's not considered mazik biyadayim.
So is it true that this is only a one-way hezek, that the gefanim are usable under all circumstances, even if the tefua is there?
When you say usable, meaning what?
I thought it was a two-way thing that you can't.
Could
put the
be. It could
together.
Be that
It looks like that the guy from the with hezek Karen, he can use his grapes no matter what.
That I don't know. But that's not relevant to our discussion, because again, he can't sue the Baal HaTfuah for damages if it's his responsibility,
partition. That he's thinking, I don't care, I'm just not going to let put up the fence, that he's not going to incur any kind of problem. I don't know.
If you want to research that, you'd have to take out a Shulchan Aruch. Let's see where it is in Shulchan Aruch. He says, Gimel.
Yeah, that's why I was looking.
Kilayim Perik Zion Mishnah Dalid.
That's why I was looking at the Minchas Chinas to see what was.
Yeah, I would look in the Rambam. That's where I would look.
It's just strange that there's only just one way.
Do we have a Rambam? I mean, if somebody could get a Rambam, we could actually look up the Rambam. The Rambam is Perik Zion Milchas Kilayim Alocha Yud Zion. Okay, 7:17 in Hilchas Kilayim, and see if the Rambam says. How this impacts on the Geffen. One last point I wanted to make here is that Tosus quotes Rabbeinu Tam, and Rabbeinu Tam has a unique approach to this language in the Braisa, Omer Lo Gidar. And he says that the Braisa uses this term Omer Lo Gidar twice to teach us She'im Hitvaseif Masayim Bitziruf shall stay pritzos yachad. This is fascinating. What would you say, Rabos? Again, if you think of this in material terms, what happens when the fence goes down once, it's replaced, and then it goes down a second time? Supposing that the tosefes of the kerem onto the tvua was less than the shear of Masayim in between the first pritz and the second pritz, it's only after the second pritzah that at that point there was a Tosefis that reaches the level of Masayim. Says Rabbeinu Tam, Einom mitztarfim lesar. This is a Pella. Imagine if there was time T1 and time T2. After time T1, which was the first Pritza, let's say there was a Tosefis of 1 to 100. After the time T2, there was another Tosefis of 1 to 100. Sacha Kol 1 to 200. Says Rabbeinu Tam, in such a case, there's no Iser Kalayim. Why? Because in between the first Tosefis and the second Tosefis, there was a Mechitza. And Rabbeinu Tam actually quotes a halacha that we may have discussed last year in Bittel called Rishon Batel. That this is considered a Tosefis in which there's Bittel at stage 1, and now that Tosefis of the Kerem into the Tfuah is completely null and void, as if it doesn't exist. And therefore we're going to start the calculation from zero. And now we're going to need a Tosefis of Masayim, of Echad to Masayim, after the second Pritza. And we cannot calculate and integrate the first Tosefis that took place before the first Pritza into the second Pritza.
Which Sif in the Rambam, really?
Oh, well, you don't. You have a Steinsaltz. Well, that's
no,
that's,
no, no, no.
I mean, you should have the same thing that I have here, Mitch. I'm not a buck in Hilchas Kalayim. He tells you to look in the Rambam Perek Zayin Hilchas Kalayim Alocha Yud Zayin.
Okay,
it's a perfect quote of the Gemara.
But you should know that it's good, as good as me, Mitch.
Rambam quotes the Gemara. He
doesn't tell you.
Doesn't tell you anything.
Yeah, but do you have the Derech Emunah? You don't have to. Can you get to Derech Emunah on Kalayim? I mean, that's the Mishnah Berurah on Kalayim, is the Derech Emunah. You can't move in Kalayim without the Derech Emunah. All right, Rabbi, so let's at least make a haskola on the new Mishnah, because, you know, we only meet twice a week, and I would like to make some progress here. I mean, again, I'm not a Bucky in Kalayim, so maybe we'll have a little bit more luck in the Mishnah that's coming down the line. Okay, then? So this I have to retire, because got to the end of this volume. Hey, now we're up to volume Vav. Okay, this Mishnah is a little bit familiar to us, but the Gemara is going to have a very interesting suffix, which is brand new. Hano Saint Semra Letzaba. Okay, so we have the raw wool that's being given over to the dyer, Vigdicho Yore, and he left it, the dyer left it on the fire too long. And as a result of this intense heat, and the tzemer now gets ruined, right, bioser, and it gets burnt to a crisp, let's say, is no se lo dmei tzamro. So the Mishnah establishes quite clearly that the dyer now, in this case, did an act of hezek, and he's got to pay the value of the tzemer. We'll call it a raw, natural tzemer. And that's okay, because again, the tzemer is worth absolutely nothing. Again, you might ask, as the Gemara is going to raise, as the Gemara raised it before, isn't this a case of uman shekilkel? And the Gemara is going to say that by leaving it on too long, he is called a poshea and not an onus. So again, even though in general we said that uman shekilkel might be potter from paying damages because he's considered an onus, but in this case this is clearly not an onus. He literally turned on the fire too high and too long. However, the Mishnah continues, tzva'o ka'ur. He did a good job, but not a great job, meaning at this particular point he got to the point of kalbus, and the Gemara is going to tell us here on Daf Kuf Aleph Omer Aleph what exactly is kalbus. Is kafra dudi? Okay, so we'll see what that's all about. And in such a case, on the one hand, the uman, the tzaba, has done a job. There is an increase in the value of the wool. It has been dyed. However, he didn't do a good job, and we'll see exactly why it's an inferior quality job. In such a case, the Mishnah establishes that the tzaba cannot collect his full fee. What he can collect is whatever expenditures he incurred. Let's say, for example, he used up some money in order to do this dyeing. That's called yitziah in the language of the Mishnah. However, although he has a right to collect that expense and that expenditure, we'll call it, that's only up to a certain point. Because if at the end of the day the job that he did doesn't afford or supply the owner of the wool with a profit of some sort, then why should the owner of the wool be paying for expenditures that exceed beyond that profit? And therefore the Mishnah establishes a very complex constellation of halachos. We're going to take the shevach, which means the increase in the value of the wool, based on market value, and we're going to take the yitziah, which means the amount of money that this tzaba spent, and we're going to compare those two figures. And basically, we're going to tip the scale in favor of the owner of the wool. Im ha-shevach yeser al ha-yitziah. If let's say the wool went up by 50, and the expenditures are 25, is no sein lo es ha-yitziah, then the tzava has rights to claim that from the 50 that were increased, I have no rights to collect that 50 because, you know, you commissioned me to, you know, I was consigned to this dying process. But at the same time, at least Chach offset my losses and pay me for Yitziah. We're not yet ready to discuss whether he can bill him for his fee, but what he can at least bill him for is the Yitziah, and so far as his Yitziah is less than the increase in the value of the Tzemer. But now the Mishnah wants to flip it around. What if the opposite takes place? V'im ha-Yitziah yisera al ha-Shevach. What if he spent more money than the Shevach? So in other words, now we're switching around the 50 and the 25. Before, the 25 was what he spent. The 50 is what was gained, the increment. Now what we're saying is that he spent 50 and it only went up in value by 25. Is no say lois ha-shevach. Once again, the Baal Bais is Yodo al-Yona. He can pay the lesser of those two figures. He doesn't have to pay him for his Yitziah because I hired you to improve the value of my wool. And you didn't improve the value of my wool beyond that minimum. So that minimum I'm willing to pay you. Again, if I have a greater increase in the value and then you want to be at least billed to offset your losses, that's one thing. That's called nosei lo se yitziah. But in this case, that the shvach is less than the yitziah, then nosei lo se shvach. I'll give you the shvach, but don't bill me and expect me to reimburse you for your expenditures. Oh. Now, the tzava did something much more radical, much more revolutionary.
Incorrect.
Litzbolo adom, he was commissioned to dye the wool red, utzvo shachar, and instead he gave him shachar utzvo adom. Is Rabbi Meir Omer, nosein lo estime tzamro. We're no longer talking about a relationship between a Baal Bais who consigned a Poel and a Poel who's claiming that he wants to at least get reimbursed to offset his losses, his expenditures. No. Now we're talking about a whole different set of rules. We're talking about the laws of what? Of a Gazlan. And one of the most fundamental laws of a Gazlan that we've discussed time and time again is that a Gazlan is Kone Bishinui, which means that we go back to the value of the raw semer as it was when it was given over to the gazlan, in this case, to the tzava, and that value is exactly what the tzava is going to have to pay. That's called dmei tzamro, because the moment that the tzava dies at the wrong color, at that point he's kone b'shinui, and a gazlan always pays kishas. Kishas Hagzela, we haven't forgotten that rule, right? Why is he considered a gazlan? Because he's making a radical change in the object, and he wasn't commissioned to make that radical change. He was commissioned to paint it red, and he painted it black. It's a whole new entity, and that's the sheet of Rabbi Meir. Now, the oddity about Rabbi Meir is the following. It's almost the case of a chote niskar. What do I mean? It you know, crime pays because yes. As a result of this kinyan gzela on the tzemer, he's going to pay a minimal amount. Correct. Let's say the raw tzemer is worth 10 on the market. Mm-hmm. Now it's dyed. Again, it's dyed the wrong color from the perspective of the owner, the original owner. But now the gazlan goes out to the market. You know, there are plenty of buyers for a black sweater. You know, not dafka a red sweater. Yeah. And it's probably worth 50 on the market. So he made a profit of 40. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is going to disagree with Rabbi Meir. He's not willing to classify this tzava as a gazlan and have him make a tremendous profit on Yenim's tzemer. But rather, the Rabbanan have to do something to, you know, stop this tzava from making a profit. And that's called a knas de Rabbanan. And we'll soon see that the Gemara is going to develop this idea of a knas de Rabbanan. And therefore, when the Rabbanan instituted this knas, they will suspend the normal halacha of kinyan shinui of a gazlan. They're going to require, therefore, that the tzava return the tzemer with its increased value, so that he, the gazel, doesn't gain ownership over the tzemer and all its incremental value. And then, says Rabbi Yehuda, if they were mafkia the din of gazel, then we go back to what we discussed earlier in the Mishnah, in the case of tzavo ka'ur, which means that the tzaboy at best could get back and get a return on a refund on his expenditures. That's in Ashvach, Yeser al Yitzia, is Nosin Lois Yitzia. In my Yitzia, Yeser al Ashvach, Nosin Lois Ashvach. If on the other hand, he spent more money than the Shvach, he has no right to get that money, because the best he can do within the context of the relationship that he was consigned to do is to ask for Shevach. And the Shevach is much less in this case than the Yitzia. My ka'ur, Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav Bar Chana, kalbus or klabus. Okay, sounds like he clobbered him over the head over here. What's a klabus? My klabus. Omer Rav Bar Shmuel, hafra dudi. It seems that when the dying process takes place, then there's a certain, call it shirayim of tseva, a certain residue of dye that remains in the pot. I'm not sure if it floats to the bottom or floats to the top, if it sinks to the bottom or floats to the top. But in any event, what he did, this tzaba, was kineach esayora b'tzemer. That's Rashi on top of the omud. He literally took some of the wool, and he wiped this. He used the wool, so to speak, like almost like a sponge, you know, to wipe off the dye. this dye that stuck on the yora. And in this case, he says, "Hatzaba es hatzemer b'shiyore hatzaba shenishtayr b'yora is tzvias hatzemer nireis kiura." As a result of doing so, I'm not sure why he did this, if he was trying to clean off his, you know, his yora, and that's the way he washed it off. You know, he's got a dirty pot over here and he wants to prepare for the next time he uses it. I don't know. You know, it's like when your wife comes back from chutzlarts, you got to make sure the kitchen looks decent, right? So you start cleaning, and then she comes back and she tells you you didn't clean anything, you know. That's a typical scenario. Yeah, I don't know if it sounds familiar to you. You know, better not to clean anything. In any event, this is how he messed it up. Now, in the footnote here, he quotes the Sheet of Mugabe. What is the word kolbus? What does that come from? He says, Kinua chayoros hu givun shiyobo kama chabarburos baharos baharos kitsuros amudin. So frankly speaking, I'm not sure exactly what these givunim are, these various colors are, but, you know, maybe you have to be a baki in Hilchus Negayim in order to see baharos, baharos. But for some reason he says that it's not going to fare well for the durability and the long-lasting dye of this tzemer. Tana Rabbana. Here we have a brisa which more or less reiterates what we saw in our Mishnah. Hanosein Eitzim Lecharosh. So a person gave raw materials, in this case wood, to a carpenter. Lasos Mehem Kisei. He was commissioned to create a seat. V'asem Mehem Safsal. Instead he made some sort of a lounge chair, or maybe a couch. Or the opposite happened. He was commissioned to make a Safsal and he made a Kisei. Safsal also Kisei. Is Rabbi Meir Omer? Rabbi Meir is going to say that he was Kona Bashinui. It's a Gazlan. Is no Saint Lo Dmei Eitzav? Because again, according to Rabbi Meir, there's no Knas. We go back to the Ikar Adin, and in the Ikar Adin, the Nagar in this case, really the Chorash, made a radical change in the very structure of the object, and that change becomes a Maisa Gzela, and therefore according to Rabbi Meir, he pays Kishas HaGzela, which means the value of the raw wood on the market. And Rabbi Yehuda says, wait a minute, what about a knas? We can't allow this charash to make such a huge profit through gzela. We're going to have to suspend the normal halach of gzela. And therefore, mashvach yesrael yitzia nosin lo yitzia. And in my yitzia yisera al hashvach nosin lo es hashvach. Umode Rabbi Meir. Is there a case in which Rabbi Meir admits to Rabbi Yehuda? Im nasan eitzim lecharash lasus mem kisei na v'yosim mem kisei keur. Right, he gave him a seat, a chair, as he was commissioned to do so, but he messed up, and it's not a beautiful, perfect chair the way it was meant to be. Or alternatively, we have the case where he gave him wood, safsal na, and he commissioned him to make a beautiful bench. V'yosa safsal kior, kior again it means the second rate safsal. Is even Rabbi Meir would agree in this case, that's not called a shinui. Again, not that Rabbi Meir agrees that we're going to institute a knas and suspend the law of shinui, but rather this is not considered a shinui. And therefore he's not kona with gzela, even though again there's some qualitative difference between the kisei na or the safsal na and the kisei kior kaar, but yet it's not a shinui. It's not a different object.
It's not much of a concession, is it? I mean, because the carpenter can do what he likes with. According to Rabbi Meir, he's still the carpenter can make a completely different thing, which maybe he like.
Again, he made it a completely different thing, or he didn't. If he made a completely different thing, then he's kona b'shinui and he pays kshasang zelu.
And therefore he's gained an awful amount.
Correct. But Meir is saying that in this case he didn't make a completely different thing.
Okay.
Right? It's only a qualitative difference. Okay. And therefore he was not kona b'shinui. And if he wasn't kona b'shinui, then even a Meir, like in the Mishnah, again let's go back to the Mishnah says that if it was tzavo kior, right, he dyed it with the shirayim around the top of the oreh, by wiping it around. Yeah. He says in that case, we go back to the laws of payment for work, and in the context of payment for work, Rabbi Meir says that Rabbi Yehuda is right, and therefore the halacha requires that what? That im ashvach yesra al yitzia nosin lo dmei yitzia, ma yitzia yesra shvach nosin lo dmei ashvach. Alright, I realize that we're going to have mincha now. I just want to tell you that the main sugya is about to appear right here. Iboilahu yesh shevach samamonim al etzemer o ein shevach samamonim al etzemer. Now, I've been spending a good deal of time to try to understand this suffix, and I'm not there yet. Hopefully, by Yom Chavishi, Hashem yoyer einenu, and we'll get some light from above.
Rabbi Meir is a charter for dishonest carpenters or dishonest imanim.
Right, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda is not going to allow for such a case.
No, you just wonder why Rabbi Meir is
choose your carpenter carefully. Be careful, yeah. You know. And choose your dyer carefully, because
choose the person who's going to pass them for carefully.
Oh, you mean, do we pass like Rebbe?
Well, I'm saying.
That's a good point.
Rambam is very interesting because he says that if you're Mesachech and the other guy doesn't know about it, it's your Geffen
becomes Kilai.
And not the Tua.
And what happens if you find out about it later? Does Rambam tell you?
Yeah, but you have to know about it. You can't be Mekadesh something that's not yours.
Right. That's because they know the most of Damshen Shalom. Oh, that's a whole other dimension to this.
Right.
Yeah, there are long, long footnotes here about that principle of Eino Demosa Damshen Shalom. Yeah. No, Kelaim, you should know, is one of the most complicated Masechtas in Shas. And the Derech Amuna dedicates an entire volume, if I'm not mistaken, just to the laws of Kelaim.
Wow.
Your mother Sadiri has half of her.
But the guy that owns the camp, he's also putting his own stuff at risk.
I'm looking for the Derech Hamuna to say that. I'm pretty sure it goes in both directions. But he doesn't have any recourse
to
sue the Balatvua.
He just doesn't care.
Well, that's strange. Yeah. Yeah, why doesn't he care?
Well, I was wondering whether this is obviously not a physical separation between two, but